It's always interesting to come home because this is home, not only the area, but this congregation is home. And each time I come here, there are new faces, which is wonderful, people I get to see just on Zoom, and then there's people that are not here. And I remember the last time that I was sitting here, Frank was here, and also Susan. I wanted to say Sue, but I was trying to be proper. Sue was here, and I talked to both of them, and then so now it's not been a few months, and I don't see them. And as I was watching Angela this morning, as I was listening to John Lazarus, that is, who was talking about his coming back from the dead. And when I was listening, I looked over and I noticed that Mason did too. And I was watching Angela and I was thinking about, I could only imagine what was in her heart. She sometimes doesn't show all these emotions, but there's a lot. I mean, to be able to go through that with John was not an easy thing. To lose her mother was not an easy thing. And then now to have her dear father leave, that's not an easy thing. Those are difficult things in your life. And I think sometimes we don't, I know that I've seen the outpouring of love even in the cards at her house, how many people have reached out to her and how many people have reached out to Jeffrey over Sue. But it still hurts and it's still hard. And I just remind us all that, you know, that sometimes when all the adulation, when all the people are reaching around you, when that leaves, is sometimes the loneliest time. So, you know, a few months from now would be a good time to remind somebody, to call them up and say, how are you doing? How are you feeling? What can I do for you? And I still remember you, you know. It's always, you know, I've said so many times, that one of the greatest words, and I think the English language is bittersweet because it encompasses everything. There's the sweetness of knowing that people who trust God and believe in God, that they're finally getting to go home and be out of the pain that they're in. But the bitter part is that we miss them. It's lonely, you know. It's difficult. And so I think every person in here has probably experienced something that like that, something that's very difficult, something that makes you feel lonely or sad it's amazing what you guys, how you pull together as a family here and how you're able to strengthen each other during these times. So thank you. Thank you for letting me be a part of this. So I'm going to begin by asking a question. And you don't have to raise your hand here because I won't embarrass you. Have you ever received a love letter? I've received a few of mine, I don't mind telling you, in my life. But I'm going to tell you that a while back I was going through, I've been trying to downsize. I'm trying to get rid of as much stuff as I can so that when I'm not here, someone doesn't have to go through it. So I'm going through all this stuff, and I'm a pack rat. I have saved all these, you know, photographs and letters and everything, and I came across a letter that I don't even think I ever opened. My recollection was they probably sent it to the wrong place. So I finally opened it 55 years later, and it was from some young woman professing her love to me. And I kind of felt strange, like, gee, what did I miss? You know, maybe I should have, but I never think I ever read it. But I sat down and read it a couple of times. I kind of read it slowly. It reminded me of, you know, there's that song that George Jones sings when it says he stopped loving her today. There's a great line in that song, and it says that he underlined in red, every I love you. That's the idea, that when you have a love letter that about from somebody you really care about, you know what, you probably keep it. Maybe you underlined it in red. Maybe you read it over and over again. I hope so. I hope you do. Now, I'm going to make a segue to this just a minute. I've learned something from John French. Well, I've learned a lot of things from John French. First of all, I'm just absolutely amazed at what a good teacher he is. I'm humbled. I am the student. He's the teacher, and I love listening to him preach. I love his thought process. But one of the things I learned from him is to slow down. I'll be watching on Zoom sometimes, and John will stop, and it might be 30 seconds, and I'm wondering what he's doing. He's thinking, you know? He's thinking about what he's going to say. That's a wonderful thing to do, it because it requires confidence to slow down and say, let me say what I'm going to say, make sure what I'm saying is what I think, instead of just, you know, yakking away. So I'm going to try to do it today. I'm going to begin by telling you two stories. The first one is about a young woman I met this week when I was in Palm Springs. I was staying in a motel, and as I often do, I get up very early. I get up and before daylight so I can go out and photograph when I can, and it was just getting daylight, and I had moving my stuff to my car to get ready to go out, and I thought it was Darth Vader. I saw this dark black shape next to the highway, like a big bat, just kind of leaned over. And because it's cold in the morning, even though it gets hot there in the day, it was cold in the morning. And so I saw the figure there from the back, and I thought, that just doesn't look right. That person looks really troubled. So I thought, well, should I stop? So I put some stuff in the car, and I looked at them, and they looked like they were trembling. I said, well, I'm on my way to church. And I thought, boy, I don't need to be in a hurry. So I went over to the person, and I think I startled her a little bit. I couldn't tell if it was male or female because they had this kind of a cloak over, I guess a blanket, because trying to stay warm. And I asked her, I said, are you okay? And she just sat there and was shaking and looking at me. And I said, are you cold? And she said, yes, I'm cold. And I said, boy, okay. So I went back to the hotel. I opened the door. I said, come in and just sit down here for a while. I'll leave the door open so nothing looks weird. And I said, just sit here until you get warm. And so she did. She was there for a while. And finally, I talked to her, and I said, where do you come from? And she couldn't answer. And I said, where do you go? And finally, it's like she took a while to trust me, and then she finally said, I don't have any place to go. I live on the street. I said, well, how about your family? And she says, I don't have a family. I used to, but they don't love me, and they don't care about me, and I don't have anybody. Well, I mean, it's breaking my heart at this point, because she's just, you know, obviously she's probably in prostitution and probably working drugs, probably trading the drugs in prostitution. And I said, where do you go? And she said, I don't have anybody. I said, well, there's some help centers, some halfway centers. She said, yeah, and I've tried and started out okay, but then I don't have them. And I said, so how do I help you? And then she finally just said, you know, can I use a restroom? And I said, sure. And I just waited. And she was like 20 minutes. And I thought, oh, my gosh, she's probably doing drugs in there. And I was nervous. But she didn't. She was cleaning herself up. And she hadn't been warm. And so anyway, long story short, the last I saw of her, she was going back out on the street with no place to go. I didn't know where else to take her. What else to do? The point was, she did not feel loved. I mean, I had a chance to talk to her for 10 minutes and tried to talk to her about the love of God, the love of Christ, that she was in fact loved and someone actually did care. And I hope by my actions, maybe she thought maybe that God does care. I hope. But I don't know what happened to her. That story is probably quite common, as sad as it is. So I'm going to tell you another story. By the way, her name was Isabel. And I asked her how old she is. She looked like she was only like 20, 20. She said, I'm 33. But she couldn't tell. I couldn't do it. Anyway, so let me tell you about somebody else that I met. And that was, I talked to some of you about this in the past. Years ago, I guess around 2000, when I worked at the newspaper, I spent a couple days with Coach John Wooden, who's UCLA's basketball coach. He was always kind of a hero to me, just because of one of my friends ended up playing for him. And just the way he treated his players always impressed me. So I had a chance to go to his house and spend the one day with him, and we sat and talked until it got dark in his house, we both got in tears. He was telling me about growing up and talking about poetry, and just was a great emotional guy. But at one point, when he got a phone call, and so he said, "Excuse me a minute," he was answering the call, so I got up and just started wandering around the house. And I wandered in his bedroom. Doors was open. I looked in there, and I was shocked, because on his bed, there were stacks and stacks of letters. I thought, what in the world? All these stacks on this bed? And so I felt a little funny. I went over closer, and one of them was opened. One of the letters had not been put in an envelope yet. It was right there. I thought, So I made a photograph of it. I never read it. Made a photograph of it. Later on, when I got back to the newspaper, I processed the film, and I said, I have no right. That's not my mail. And I destroyed it, as I should, I think, quite frankly. I don't think he ever knew that I even saw it. I didn't read it, but I did see all the letters. What I learned about Coach Wooden was his wife, Nell, died in 1985, March 21st, 1985. And since her death, every March, he would go to Forest Home or whatever they call it. Yeah, Forest Lawn, that's where his wife was buried. He'd go up and visit her, and he would come back, and he would write her a love letter. And then he'd put it in an envelope, and he would put it up on top of his bed. He had over 200 love letters on his bed. It had been a while since she was gone. And on that bed, he also slept. But he would never sleep between the sheets, because that's where they slept. So he would always just sleep on top of the bed with a cover on top of him, only on his own, on his side. That was a man who loved his wife. Really loved his wife, and proved his love for his wife. I asked him one time, he showed me that there was a table and there was a Bible that was open, and I don't remember the passage, and he said that was the scripture we were reading when she died. That's the last thing we read together, and I'm leaving it at that spot. That's what he said he was going to do. And I asked him, I said, well, Coach, you know, you're still young enough. I think he was 90 at the time. I said, I told him about some friends that I knew that were 90 that got married. And I said, you think you'll ever get married again? And he said, no. He said, Nell was the only girl that I ever dated, that I ever kissed, that I ever loved. Wow. That still gets me. I couldn't believe what he said. At the end of each letter, he would always tell her how much he missed her and how much he loved her and how he couldn't wait until they could go and be together again. The day he died, several of his basketball players were at his bedside with him, and he said to them, would one of you mind shaving me? He said, okay. And they shaved me. He said, I want to look good when I go see Nell. That's a true story. So, as John so perfectly did this morning by reading in Ephesians, he was telling us about how much Jesus loves us, how much God loves us. Do you realize that God has written you the greatest love letter that's ever been written. But if you don't read it, you'll never know how much he loves you. You'll never know what it means. He says that if we would read it, we would know of his love. You know, sometimes when I feel sad, and I'm sure you do too, or down, or maybe even a little lost, there's some books that give me more comfort than others. You know, sometimes I'll reread the book of John over and over. I love the book of John. Or I'll read Philippians if I want to stay strong. But if I don't read it, if I go and I don't, even when I'm sad, if I won't read it, then I'm not going to feel that love. And so I hope that we'll do it. So Jesus said that he came into this world because he loved us, right? Ephesians, the fourth chapter. Because of his great love. Isn't that what he says? Because? It struck me last week. I was thinking about the word because. And that's why I decided I would want to talk about this today. Because of God's great love, he sent Jesus Christ to a world that was not very open to him. A cruel world, quite frankly. It wasn't a great time. He sent him here, and Jesus suffered so much because he loved you. Not us. He loved you. That's a hard concept for me to get in mind. Unless I could picture and say, everybody's in the world is gone, and I'm the only one standing here, and the only way that I'm ever going to be saved is that he's going to die for me. When I can finally grasp that he loves me. He loves you. God so loved the world. Isn't that what John 3:16 said? That God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. Right? To all those that would believe. Because he loved us. So, if I could get that, if somehow I could be able to get that young woman, Isabel, if she could ever grasp that yes, she was loved, and she is valuable, and someone has loved so much that they would die for her, it would change her life. I know it would. And I hope it changes your life, because if it doesn't change your life, I don't think you understand that. Maybe you don't like love letters. I don't know. When Jesus said in Matthew 11:28, "Come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." I've probably told some of you this story in the past. There was a time in my life that I read this passage. I was probably about 20, 21 maybe, and very, very depressed. I was staying in an apartment. I didn't even have the electricity turned on because I was depressed. I didn't think I was even going to stay there. And at night, I finally would go and I would light a candle and I would get a bottle of Ripple and a Bible and I'd start reading. Eventually, I got rid of the Ripple. But I'd start reading the Bible, and I started with the book, always with the book of John. And I remember that passage. "Come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." I needed rest. I really needed rest for my soul. And I suggest that you probably do too. Greater love, the Bible says, Jesus said, "Greater love has no man than this, that he would lay down his life for his friends." Right? And he said, "You are my friends if you follow me," basically, "if you believe me." All right. So I think we know this. All the things I said to you, I won't have to expound much further, because, again, I think John did so well this morning reminding us of this. So I'm going to jump to the second part of "because I love you." And now we're not thinking about how God loves us. I want you to reverse it. It struck me when we were reading Mason's Wednesday night class, we're going to the book of Exodus. And it struck me when he reminded me, I'd read that before, but I don't think I'd ever thought about it, when he was talking about what God said that he would do. God said, I will do this, and I will do this, and I will do this. In a sense, when we obey the gospel of Christ, it's very much like getting married. It really is like getting married, because you take what you call wedding vows. And they ask you, are you going to love this person with all your heart? You're going to love them and protect them or obey them or whatever language they use. And you're sitting here nodding and they say, I will. I do or I will. Is that what we're saying when we're baptized into Christ? Well, I don't think we are thinking that sometimes, but what we're saying is, I will. God already says, I will. Now it's your turn to say, I will. Let me tell you some I wills that you might want to think about. I will believe in him. I believe in him because of what he's done. I believe in him because of his love. I believe in him because of his life. I believe in him because he's told me that he loved me. I believe in him because he proved that he loves me. You know, the interesting thing about love, too, is that it's like 1 John. When you read 1 John, the third chapter, it's what he says is that we love God. Why? Because he first loved us. Isn't that the way it goes sometimes in love and in regular life? You might be going along and you might see somebody you're kind of attracted to and you think, and then you're not really going to say it, but all of a sudden they love you. They want to be with you. They whatever you do, they think that's important. And so because of their love for you, suddenly you reciprocate and you love them. I love him because I believe what he said. Jesus said, the words that I've spoken to you, they are spirit and they are truth. I will believe you, Lord. I will believe what you said. I know it's hard, as Jordan said or others have said. I know it's difficult sometimes to understand. It's difficult to know the consequences. But I believe what Jesus said. I think this is one of the hardest things I think my family, my physical family, the hardest time they have with me is they always say, you believe what he's written. You believe what he said. I said, yes, I do. That is my standard. And the reason I believe it, because I know he loves me. I believe him, so I will love him. I am going to believe him. And I believe that he sees me, and that he knows me, and that he cares for me. That's what I believe. So when I says I will love him, it's because I believe he sees me. Don't you want to know somebody that have a mate that says they see you? You know, I don't mind, not to embarrass Mason. When I married Aaron, one of my family had not met Aaron, and I have a nephew that was much younger, obviously. And my nephew, when he met Aaron, he said later, he said, well, I see what he sees in her, but I don't see what she sees in him. And I said that to Mason. You know what he said to me? One of the kindest things I've ever heard. He said, maybe she sees you. Ooh. Isn't that true? God sees you. I might not see you. God sees you. Jesus knows you. He loves you. He cares about you. And you know, I love him and I believe in him because I trust him. How many people can you honestly say that you completely trust in? I will trust you. I will trust him. Isn't that what he said? Let me read a passage real quick to remind you. I'm going to go slow because John's taught me to go slow. You do. You learn from, you know, you learn from young people. John, isn't Romans after Acts? Let me go. Romans 8 here, just a minute. Now I'm going to have to do that. I was trying to avoid having to use my glasses. I was trying to go by memory here. So in verse 27, he says, "And he who searches hearts knows what is the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for the saints according to the will of God. And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose." Is that not right? The reason I trust God is, as difficult as times get, and they did, and they're going to get difficult, I trust that it will be all right. I trust that he's going to figure out a way to bring this to help me draw closer to him. And I trust him. I believe in him because I love him, and so I'll start with my I wills. I will follow him. I'm going to follow wherever he leads. I think I told you last time when I was here, and some of you weren't here, but I had an odd experience, kind of a dream-like thing, and I still don't know that I understand it. It was 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I was on the couch. I couldn't sleep. I looked out, and it was as though someone was talking to me. It was so much, it moved me so much that after this, whatever it was, happened to me, the voice that I heard that wasn't audible says, "Trust me. Follow me. Step where I step." That's what I do remember that. And I wrote it down. I got out and I wrote it down. And my wife woke up and said, "What's going on? Why are you crying?" And I said, "You ain't gonna believe what happened to me." And I said, "But I do know this. The message was clear. Trust me and follow me and step where I step." And in this half sleep or whatever vision it was, I could see just feet walking on top of this very high hill, and I don't like heights, and I was trying to follow those feet. I also realize, and I pray that I can do this, that I will not be ashamed of him. You know, it's easy to be ashamed of somebody because of peer pressure. Sometimes you're afraid because, you know, everybody, it's cool. It's not cool to like somebody that someone else doesn't like, right? It's not cool to say, "Well, I'm a Christian, so that's why I'm doing this or not doing this." Jesus said, and that's maybe a harsh well, he said that it would, if you're ashamed of me, then I would be ashamed of you. Can you imagine if you walk down the street with your wife and you're holding hands, and all of a sudden here comes some of your friends and you say, "Oh, let go of my hand quick." Why? Let go of my hand. I don't want them to see you with me, you know. I'm ashamed of you. Instead of saying, "This is my wife. I'm proud. I'm thankful." And then I will also say, I will, in this, I will try to love others, as we read. Thank you for reading that. I will try to love. Well, it's not easy to love others. That's not. Sometimes it's not even natural, because sometimes people can just test you and challenge you. But you know what? I think Jesus set the pattern. I'm going to love you. I'm going to love others, and I'm going to love them the best I can do that. I'm going to try to love them because he loves me. And also, I'm going to try to forgive others. You know, everyone always calls what they call the Lord's Prayer. Doesn't it? In the beginning, he says that we're to recognize who God is, hallowed is his name. Forgive us our debts as we forgive those that sin against us, or forgive our debtors. I need to be forgiving, and I'm going to be forgiving of others. And I'm going to try, as John says, and I want to keep your commandments. I'm making a will. I am going to keep your commandments the best I can, the best I know how, because I love you. All of these things are because I love Jesus. It's one thing to sing, oh, how much I love you, how I love Jesus. It's another thing to show how you love Jesus by, as we pointed out, by service, by loving other people. And then, as John says in 15:18, those that endure to the end shall be saved. I'm going to endure. I don't care how many times you get knocked down, and you're going to get knocked down too. I'm going to endure to the end, because that's where the salvation is going to be for you and for me, is to not give up. You know, I've said in the past, I've had a wonderful career, and it's allowed me to meet a lot of really interesting people. And I still remember another coach, a basketball coach, during the NCAA playoffs. His name was Jim Valvano. And Jim Valvano was so kind and allowed me into the locker room with him and into his motel, and I sort of got to know him a little bit. And the guy was so filled with optimism. And what he would always say was, never give up. Never give up. He died very young of cancer. But there's the Jimmy V Foundation that just basically says, never give up. And so that, all these things I'm telling you, folks, they're all things that you know. But they're all things, when he says, put them in remembrance of these things. I feel like my mission sometimes that God uses me is to remind you, to remind myself, but to remind you of who you fell in love with. You know, we made reference today to basically in our class about the seed and the sower, right? Well, when you look at the story of the seed and the sower, some of them quit, didn't they? Some of them, the soil wasn't very deep. Their heart wasn't right, right? You know why? They never fell in love. They just never fell in love. Once you truly fall in love. And I'm not talking about the eros love, the passionate love. We're talking about the agape love. When you finally understand how much you're loved and you truly fall in love, the seed's going to stay in your heart. You're going to bear fruit as you're bearing fruit even right now. And then finally, I would say, I believe in him, and I love him, because he said in John 14, I'm going to prepare a place for you. And where I am, you may be also. Because I love you. You know, we have that picture. You used to have that picture in older days where a man was going to get married to his wife. He wanted to go, before he got married, he wanted to, you know, build a cabin or get something stable so he could bring his wife to there. Well, maybe we're playing on that picture a little bit. Jesus said, because I love you, I'm preparing a place for you. but I'm going to come back and I'm going to get you. I'm not going to leave you. I'm not going to forsake you. Where I am, you can be with me ever. You know, Coach wouldn't believe that. He was, I don't know exactly what the depth of his faith. I know that he professed to be a Christian, acted as a Christian. Went, I think he used to go to the Christian church. I don't know where he went to, for be sure. But I do know that he had a faith and he tried to apply that whatever wherever he went. He looked forward to seeing Nell. I want to be in the position where I look forward to seeing Jesus. I don't want to see him if I'm contrary to him. I don't want to see his wrath. I don't want to be part of that. But boy, do I look forward to seeing him as he is, being with him, the one that I love, the one that cares about me forever. That drives me. And as I age, I think it drives me even more. I think I understand it better than I did when I was younger. And I hope that that would be the case for you. I hope you recognize that. I hope this causes you to want to love others and that, you know, that you, when you see people out there like Isabel, and sometimes the Isabels of the world, they're not carrying a blanket and they're not shivering. They're just, you don't know what they're suffering. You can't see it sometimes until you really get to know them, unless you really watch them. I remind you, folks, there's a lot of people suffering. There's a lot of people that are cold. There's a lot of people that are lost. And God has put it up on us to bring them to him. Part of our mission, isn't it? I think we forget about our mission. To make disciples of others. To love them and care about them and try to bring them to him. So that they can get warm and be comforted and feel loved. So, it's a brief lesson, but I still finished 4 minutes ahead of time, which is good. I hope it helps you. I hope that this reminds you, like I said, coupled with the class this morning that John taught, you should never say in your life it's a bad day because nobody loves me, because you know how many people love you. You know. So the lesson is yours. If you're not a Christian, that means you don't love the Lord yet. That means you don't understand him yet. You don't know him yet. But he's calling you. He's pleading for you to come to him and to trust him and let him deliver you and give you that whole new life and you become that new creation. He is pleading for you as we're pleading for you. So think about that where you are in your life and make that decision right now and say, I will do this, I will follow him, and I will do this until the end of time. Won't you come as we stand and sing?